Og þá ekkert annað, ekki þitt í fyrstu, að bjóða Michael E. velkomna.
Hi, my name is Michael Manning Earl, and I'm a female alcoholic. And this is...
Ég heiti María, ég alkoholisti.
Real alcoholic. She has to be to volunteer to help me. I'm going to talk a little bit, so we'll get to this last. Okay, good. She's going to help. We're going to do a little stuff. We're going to try and do it in both languages, so it should be fun. But anyway, Mickey, where did he go? Oh, I'm so glad he's not here to criticize me. There he is. Okay. He did a wonderful job, and he woke all of you guys up for me, and I'm very thankful. This is really hard for me because I'm kind of a shy person, you know, and so I'm just sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and this is the way I went through the steps is the way I'm going to share it with you. And it's not the only way to go through the steps. You know, we talk about being big book thumpers, and I am a big book thumper. I went through the steps out of the big book, but it's amazing that there's many ways to do the steps out of the big book. You know, different people interpret the big book in different ways, especially when it comes to 6 and 7. So this is not the only way. This is just the way that I was taken through the steps and the way I take people through the steps. And it's not up for debate, and it's not up for challenge, because it's just my experience. You know, and I'm not telling anybody this is how to do it. This is just my experience. And I'd like to introduce to you my husband, Ted. He's sitting over there. Stand up, Ted, just so everybody knows who you are. And he's the reason I'm now Michael M. I'm now Michael E. And not Michael M. And it's all, you know, I still go by the name of Michael Manning Earl, and it's awful. My initials are, well, even Michael Earl, my initials are M-E. Me. It's all about me. It's not good. Not good. So anyway, my job in this short period of time is to try and go through steps 4 through 12. So it'll be an overall view because, you know, of the time constraint, but it's really going to be an emphasis on steps 6 and 7. Because a lot of people miss 6 and 7. They really don't understand 6 and 7. I think it's sad that a lot of people don't know the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you know the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, then you will understand this book, and you'll understand the way this book was written. This book, as you heard earlier, in the first 164 pages, does not tell you to get a sponsor. But the whole book teaches you how to be a sponsor. And how they got around that is they wrote a chapter on sponsorship, and that chapter is called Working with Others. And that's all about sponsorship. Now, if you know the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll know that we broke off from a group called the Oxford Group. And it was a Lutheran minister broke off from a Lutheran church, and he started this movement. And its headquarters were at Oxford University. In England, and so it got the nickname of the Oxford Group. And they had a set of principles, which we numbered into steps, which really make up our program today. But it was for everybody. It wasn't just for drunks. And this little group, a few drunks came in here, and they, in fact, the Oxford Group leader didn't like alcoholics, that's for sure. They didn't believe in drinking. They didn't believe in smoking. So they had a real hard time with the alcoholics coming in there and getting sober. And this little group of alcoholics that started to get sober formed what they call the Drunk Squad. Because you were placed on squads. After you did your steps, you had your spiritual awakening, you were placed on like the business squad. Your job was to go out and get rich, famous people into the Oxford Group. But the drunks formed what they called the Drunk Squad. All they wanted to do was work with drunks. That's all they wanted to do. And they got together and they decided to write this book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And they wanted this book to go around the world where there was nobody to ask to be a sponsor. No one to ask to be a sponsor. There's no such thing as the Oxford Group on the East Coast, on the West Coast in the United States, because it was mostly in England and the East Coast of the United States. And there was no such thing as Alcoholics Anonymous, so there was no one to ask to be a sponsor. So how they got around that is they wrote the book teaching you how to be a sponsor. But they always had sponsors, even in the days of the Oxford Group, and the sponsor's job was to guide you through the steps of the program. And so this book really, in a roundabout way, talks about sponsorship, and it's not about getting the first, it's not about getting the best sponsor, it's about being a sponsor. It's about being a sponsor. Of course, you can't transmit something you haven't got. So obviously, you're going to have to go through the steps so you have something to transmit. But you're going to learn a lot more about yourself by working with others. I have learned so much about myself through the women that I sponsor. You know, I did a thorough inventory to the best of my ability, but things came up as I listened to other women's inventories. You know, I learned more about myself. More will be revealed as you're working with newcomers. And so this is what this book is really about, is teaching you how to work with others. Okay, so we're going to do a little bit on the fourth step right now. And I also want to tell you this, because I'm afraid I'll tell you, in this big book, it tells you when it comes to taking your fifth step, that means sharing with another person all your deep, dark secrets, you know, and it says that you can do it with a psychiatrist, a priest, a family member. Oh, my God, what was Bill thinking of? Not a family member. But the reason why the book tells you that is because, again, I told you that this book was to go out where there was no one to ask to be a sponsor. So that's why they tell you you can do it with a priest or a psychiatrist. But where they had sponsorship, they always recommended you do the fifth step with your sponsor. Because the sponsor is the one who knows about 6 and 7 and 8. A priest and psychiatrist doesn't. And so it's best to do, if you can, your inventory, your fifth step with your sponsor, who is grounded in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, we're going to get on. This book tells us on page... she's going to help me with page numbers, trying to translate page numbers in your book, in the Icelandic book. But in this big book, the fourth step, you can read about the fourth step in pages 64 to 71. The fourth step is in 64 to 71. Does anybody know what that is in the Icelandic book? Hello. I was needing her help. No, do you know what it is, 64 to 71?
78.
68, 64 to 78, is it?
From the 77
and on. Okay, she's going to get her book just in case. Maybe they can tell me that in a little bit. Okay, so anyway, it tells us that we are to do three inventories, huh? 83? Oh, 77 to 83? The fourth step starts on 83 to 89. 83 to 89. Okay, great. That's good information to know. Okay, so in those pages, and hopefully your book has been translated correctly, because I've heard some things that weren't quite, like for the word sanity, they used health, which isn't quite right, but hopefully it's translated correctly. In those pages, it tells us that we're to do three inventories. Three inventories. The first inventory is on resentment. The second inventory is on fear. And the third inventory is on sex. So we're just going to try and do a few little diagrams on this, on the board right here. And my little helper is going to do the writing for me. But I want to remind everybody, the big book says that this is our inventory. It's not the other man's. So my sponsor told me that meant I had to list everything I felt guilty about. Everything I felt guilty about, all my deepest, darkest secrets. The things I feel guilty about are the things I'm going to drink over. Where would you put that in the category of resentment, fear, and sex? Where would you put your guilt? You'd put it under resentment. I'm resentful at myself. So we're going to do a little diagram here. You want to draw some columns? Now, the big book, if you look at our big book, the American big book, it has three columns, which is misleading. You have to go on and you have to read further. Then it tells you now you have to go back at those resentments and look at your part and where were you to blame. So we're really going to have a total of five columns. So, Okay, so the first column is going to be I'm resentful at. The cause. No, the cause is in the second column. Affects my part is the next month. My part. And the last column is where was I to blame? Okay, and so we're going to give you categories that things are going to fall under. You had Joe and Charlie here, so you probably know a lot of this already. But okay, so say the first column, I'm going to list everything I feel guilty about first. I'm just going to get it out of the way. Those are the things I'm going to drink about. So I'm going to give you, for instance, with myself. What I put in that first column is I'm resentful at myself. Why? One reason is because I prostituted. I'm resentful at myself because I was a thief. Two big things that I really felt guilty about. How does that affect me? What does that affect? That affects my self-esteem. I feel bad about myself. It affects my personal relationships. People I stole from weren't real crazy about me. It affected my emotional nature. I'll try and slow down for you. It affected my pocketbook or my finances. It affected my security. And it affected my future ambitions. You know, there's a lot of things I didn't do because of my prostitution and being a thief. You know, I didn't go out there and put myself out in the world because a lot of people knew about that. So that kept me from doing things in the future. Okay, what is my part in all that? Your part's going to fall under, say, five categories. Selfish. So my part is selfish. Prostituting and stealing, selfish. Dishonest, against the law. Self-seeking. Getting what I want when I wanted it. What else is there? Selfish, dishonest, selfish. Frightened. Afraid I was going to get caught. Afraid of the law. Afraid of God. And inconsiderate. Okay, you want to write it down? Write it down on your paper while I say it again. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, inconsiderate. And all those words you can find in those pages 64 to 71. You'll see all those there in different places, so you have to look for them. Inconsiderate falls under the sex inventory, but it's still good to use on the resentment. Okay, so that's my part. So now I'm going to write, where was I to blame? I'm going to write, how was I selfish? Stealing, taking something that wasn't mine. How was I dishonest? Well, stealing and prostitution are both against the law. And I lied to everybody. I lied to everybody about everything. Self-seeking, again, taking something that isn't mine. Taking something that I want, even though it's not mine, is self-seeking. Frightened, afraid I'm going to get caught. A lot of fear. And also I stole because I was afraid there wasn't enough. That there wasn't enough and I wasn't going to get my needs met. So I stole. And that was all out of fear base. I prostituted because out of fear. I didn't know how to work. I didn't know how I was going to support myself. I didn't know how I was going to support my daughter. So I prostituted. All that fell under fear. Afraid God couldn't take care of me. And what's the last one? Inconsiderate. I'm not only inconsiderate of the people I'm stealing from, I'm inconsiderate of myself. So sometimes inconsiderate can mean yourself. I mean, it's very inconsiderate of myself to prostitute. It's the thing that I felt the guiltiest about. It's the thing that made me have all this low self-esteem. I mean, I was inconsiderate of myself. And stealing was inconsiderate of other people. Does anybody have any questions about that? Do you understand about putting guilts under resentment? Your deepest, darkest secrets? Okay, then you can draw a line under it. Okay, now we're going to get into resentments of other people. And I'm just going to give you, for instance, for myself. Again, I am resentful at my dad. Why? Because he abandoned us. He was a married man. You just can put abandon us. He was a married man. He got my teenage mom pregnant, and then he abandoned us. I never met him till I was 27. So I'm resentful at him. And how does that affect me? It affects my self-esteem. Kids used to tease me. They used to call me a B-A-S-T-A-R-D. Unlike Mickey Bush, I had a sponsor that told me I had to clean up my language. She said I couldn't come in here. She said, I'm not putting anybody down. This is just my sponsor, and my, she said that profanity was not a sign of spiritual growth, so I have to spell it out. I can't say it from the podium, or my sponsor will get me. Okay, so I was called a B-A-S-T-A-R-D when I was a child. I was teased, you know, because that was, you know, I was born out of wedlock. That was a very bad thing. So it affected my self-esteem. It affected my personal relationship. It affected my personal relationship with my dad. It affected how I related to men in general. What's the next one that I have on there? Oh, yeah. It affected my emotional nature. I had a lot of emotions behind this, a lot of self-pity. It affected my emotional nature. It affected my security. I always felt very insecure. I felt unloved. I didn't feel like other kids. And it affected my sexual nature. It affected me sexually on how I related to men. I got married at the age of 15 because I was never going to have sex outside of marriage. Never. I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to be like my mom. So at the age of 15, to get out of my home life, I married some crazy man. But marriage was very important, so that's how that affected me. I wasn't going to be like my mom and get married, you know, have sex out of marriage. So I got married at a very young age, at the age of 15, and he really took me through another phase of the disease of alcoholism. And what's the next one? And it affected my future ambitions. I never felt good enough. I always felt less than, and it affected the way I reacted in life and the things that I did. I didn't even go to school because of those things, so it affected me in every area of my life. Okay, and my part in that is selfish. Now, how is that selfish? Does anybody know how that's selfish? It's selfish because I expect a father to be the way I expect him to be. I don't have a clue about him. I don't know him. I don't know what the background of his marriage is. I don't know what the background of his childhood. I just have this idea of how a father is supposed to be. And that's the way he should be, and that was it. And so my part was selfish. Later on, when I met my father, I met him at the age of 27, and I was full into my drinking, and I just took him through hell. You know, I just put him through hell. He's trying to make up things up to me. I'm into my drinking. And I ended up moving out to Colorado. He offered me an opportunity to move to Colorado. I ended up having affairs with bus drivers on the way over there, getting pregnant, having an abortion, falling down the stairs, breaking my leg, ripping off his booze cabinet, ripping off his medicine cabinet, and ripping off his money. And this is a man that's trying to make amends to me for not being in my life. And so I would say all those things I did were selfish. They were dishonest. Self-seeking. I moved to Colorado because I just wanted my dad to make things up to me. Put under self-seeking, moved to Colorado, wanting my dad to make things up to me. Frightened. I was afraid that he would never love me like he did his other children, the ones he had in marriage. And so I, under self-pity, I drank over it. I drank more over it when I lived near him. And inconsiderate. I was inconsiderate of him, his feelings, his trying to make amends to me. And I'm trying to hurt him. And I was inconsiderate of myself. Okay, does anybody want to have a resentment they want to put on the board? Share with us in the microphone? Nope. How about you? Sure. Sure. Okay, she's going to give us, let's give her the microphone. Thanks, Thor.
Can it be an old one?
Sure.
Something
yeah.
Dealt with already,
so yeah.
I don't have to, you know.
Yeah.
Reveal myself. Let me see. I had.
Oh, okay. I had my mom.
What was it? Cause?
Yeah, cause. Why are you resentful at your mom?
She was always trying to change me.
Okay, her mom was trying to change her. And so how did that affect you?
Self-esteem.
Yeah, you can just put S-E, self-esteem.
Self-esteem.
Yeah. Personal relationship.
Oh, yeah. Personal relationship. Sexual relationship.
Sexual relationship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Emotional nature.
Security.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And what else was there?
Future ambitions?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Okay. And your part?
I was very selfish.
She was selfish. And how were you selfish?
I was always trying to change her.
Okay. That goes in the last column. Trying to get her to see your point of view, uh-huh. to do it your way. So she's in turn trying to change your mom. So her part is selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Was your part dishonest? Did you lie to her about things?
Yes. I lied to her about almost
everything.
Everything. And I stole from her.
Okay. So put that in the last column. That's how she was dishonest. She lied to her mom about everything and she stole from her.
Mm-hmm. Inconsiderate.
So she was inconsiderate. Inconsiderate of your mom's feelings.
Yeah.
Lying and stealing is inconsiderate. That goes without saying.
Yes. And I went further than that also. I mean, I brought people to her home. I disrespected mm-hmm. everything she gave to me.
Okay. So can you see how we're trying to get at our part? We disregard the other man's faults entirely. So it's recommended that, first of all, you do your whole inventory and do those first three columns. Then you go back to those three columns and you add this, what was my part and where was I to blame? After you've already done the inventory of the first three columns. Now you go back to it and you look at it from an entirely different angle. Where was I to blame? What was my part in it? Because we can't change another person. If our problems or if somebody else is making, we're screwed. You know, because we can't change anybody else. So we look at our part in it. Because we do have a chance if we can change our part. We change the way we react to life and the way we view life. Okay, anybody have any questions? Okay, one.
Maria, how did your mom affect your sexual relations?
Okay, she said, how did your mom affect your sexual relations?
Well, I brought them to her home, for instance. She didn't always approve of whoever I brought home. And she was very often hurt by things I did.
Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Anybody else? Somebody else had a question? Yes.
I have a question to you. How can you forgive your father if he did that to your sister in a sexual way?
How can you forgive your father if he is... Okay, so he incested. There's incest involved. Okay, let's do that. Let's do that. Draw a line under that. Okay, and first of all, I want to point out something to you that I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And other people are going to tell you, you have to forgive, you have to forgive, you have to forgive. I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous you cannot force forgiveness. You cannot force forgiveness. My daughter was kidnapped from an AA dance, a dance like you're going to have tonight. My daughter was kidnapped from one. She was 3 years sober. She was brutally raped and almost murdered. Now, how can you tell her she has to forgive her perpetrator? And she drank over it. And every time she tried to get sober, everybody would say, you have to forgive your perpetrator. So she would try and forgive him, and it'd bring up these feelings, and she'd drink. And she'd drink, and she'd drink. Finally, the last time she came into Alcoholics Anonymous trying to get sober, this man just told her, he said, just put that aside. Just don't even go there. Just concentrate on doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and working with others. And let's just see what happens. And she did that. She just put the steps first. She just worked with others. And when you're working with others, it takes you out of there, takes you out of the self-pity. And the forgiveness came, but it came in God's time. What happened to her was she was 6 months sober. She's just working with others. And she's just doing her steps, and she's doing the deals, and she's laying that aside. And somebody asked her to go on a panel. This is in California. You go on panels. You go to detox centers, and you share your story, or you go to jails, and you share your story. And she was asked to go on a panel to a lockdown facility for the criminally insane. This was at Metropolitan State Hospital, and she just thought it was the detox center. And when she got there, she found out it wasn't the detox center. It was people who were locked up for the criminally insane, pedophiles. Do you know what a pedophile is here? Pedophiles, rapists, they, you know, all men that have done these heinous things. And she said when she got in there and they closed the door and they locked it, she just had all this fear. A pedophile is somebody who molests children, for those of you who didn't know. And anyway, they closed the doors because it's a lockdown facility. She was locked in there with all these men that were just like the perpetrator that she had to deal with when she was kidnapped. Her heart started pounding and she couldn't breathe. And then all of a sudden they started reading how it works. And all of a sudden that fear just went away and she realized she's in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in when she shared in the panel, she did not share about her rape because she didn't want to offend anybody, but she shared about something so bad happened to her that she turned her back on God and she couldn't accept God and shared about how she couldn't get the program because of the God thing. After the meeting closed, several of these men who have done heinous things came up to her and started sharing their childhoods with her. And all the things that they had done to other people had been done to them as little kids. And as they were sharing all this pain as a little child, my daughter felt this compassion for them of what happened to them when they were children. And the forgiveness just came. You know, the forgiveness just came. It came in God's time. And she was able to let that go. And that's just, and that's how I believe that we can't force forgiveness, that we just have to get on with these steps, get out there and work with other people, and something's going to happen. God's, as long as you're willing, God's going to somehow give you the ability to forgive. But it's in God's time and it might take years. Okay, so let's do that. What's your name?
My name is Quinner and I'm an alcoholic.
Okay. And you're resentful at your dad?
As for that, I have to forgive him, but it took me 10 years after his death to do so.
Okay, so he's resentful at his dad because his dad molested his sister. Did he molest you?
No.
Okay.
But he molested my young daughter too.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
That's heavy to forgive.
Yeah, that's a big one. Okay.
I have not done that.
Okay, and molested his daughter. Okay, even though he did that, you have not done that.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good. Okay. All right, and how does that affect you, those things?
I forgive.
Does it affect your self-esteem?
Yes.
Does it make you feel bad about yourself because you have a father like that?
Yes.
It affects your personal relationship with your dad? Does it affect your relationship with other men?
Yes.
Okay. Does it affect your emotional nature? It brings up every emotion that you can think of.
Yeah, I can tell you, everybody here, I got the age problem. And I got it from a man.
Okay. All right, so he's also saying that affected his sexual relations.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And it affected your future ambitions. This has controlled and ruined your life.
I can say so because...
And your feelings.
No. It did not impact my future...
Your future ambitions. Now, you say you had sex with a man, right?
Yeah, once.
Once. Do you feel like that was a result of what your dad did to your sister? Okay, so that is affecting your future ambitions.
Yeah.
Way back then affected your future ambitions.
Anyway.
Okay, now your part in this resentment is, do you have a part in this resentment? Do you know anything about your father's childhood?
I know he was, no, I don't know so much about it.
Okay, but you have an expectation that he should be the way you think he should be, the way a father should be. I know, as dumb as this sounds.
He never was a father to me.
Okay. But you know nothing about him or his background.
I know he was married to my mom and we grew up together.
Okay.
We did this thing with my sister. And my daughter said when she was coming from him after a weekend, you know, caring, he had bad things in his vagina.
Okay, let me tell you, did you already know about your sister?
Yeah.
And you let your daughter go with him?
I have seen him do it.
Mm-hmm.
Seen him do it in the breast and things like that.
Okay, and you let your daughter go with him anyway? I thought he was different?
I was a kid when I saw it, and so I didn't think it was so bad.
Yeah.
Okay,
so I think what he's going to do on his inventory, when he gets into his inventory, he's not only going to put he's resentful at his dad, he's going to also put in his inventory he's resentful at himself because he let his daughter go with him. when he knew what he had done for his sister. I think that will come up in your inventory, that you have a huge resentment there. Yes. Okay, so his part's dishonest. You lied to yourself about your dad's capabilities. I mean, you lied to yourself. Yes, okay. Frightened. A lot of fear about what's going to happen to your daughter in the future and your sister. A lot of fear around this.
No, I didn't feel fear because I didn't know it so very well before my sister told me all about it.
A lot of fear now?
Yes.
Are you fear that they're screwed up?
I'm glad about it.
Okay, fear. Did you put fear down? Okay, and inconsiderate. His part was inconsiderate because he let his daughter go with him even though he knew what his...
I feel guilty.
Yes. So that'll go under your inventory. Like I put prostitution and a thief, I put that guilt under myself. So in your inventory, that's what you'll do. Okay, and we already talked about where he was to blame. Where he was to blame, just put he knew what his dad did to his sister, and he let his daughter go with her anyway. So do you see how some of this is going to be revealed to you? You're going to think you're resentful at someone else, and then you're going to find out you've got resentments around it about yourself.
I've been drinking kind of a lot of bubbles.
Yeah. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, let's move on to the fear. We got a whole bunch of steps to cover. Okay, fear. Okay, basically, really, in the big book, it says, what is your fear? And why do you have it? So you can do it in two columns or you can do it in three columns. You can put, is it that self-reliance failed you because it asked that question? But you can also, that can also be covered under the one column that says, you can have three columns, yeah. Okay, so what is the fear? Which part of self-reliance failed me? And that'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 place things. But you don't need to worry about that now. I really think these things should be in different order. But anyway, let's first go on to what am I afraid of? Does anybody have a fear? Okay, somebody yell out a fear.
Employees.
You're afraid of employees? Okay, she's afraid of employees. Why do you have that fear?
Why? I've been kicked out of jobs.
So you're afraid of employers.
Yeah.
Okay, she's afraid of employers because she's been fired. So now she's afraid of the authority figures. Okay, what part of self-reliance failed you? Is it self-esteem? Is self-esteem involved in it?
Self-esteem.
Makes you feel bad about yourself? Okay, pride, big time. But this is self-reliance failed you. Emotional security, pocketbook when it comes to dealing with employers, ambitions. Does it affect your future ambitions? You're afraid to go out there and look for another job. Personal relations with employers, and it does not affect you sexually, I hope. Okay. So does anybody have any questions about that? What is the fear and why do you have it? Okay, I'm going to give you one of my fears. I'm afraid of dying. Why do I have that fear? Because everybody does. Everybody dies, and I'm afraid because I don't know what it's like. You know, I'm afraid of the unknown. I hear a lot of things about heaven and hell and this and that and this and that, but in reality, I really don't know. And so I'm afraid of the unknown. So I'm afraid of dying because everybody does, and I'm afraid of the unknown. Yeah. You can have it all under one column. It doesn't matter. Because it says the cause, and was the cause self-reliance failed you. So it can all be in one column. It was kind of confusing the way we did it. I like it just having it in two columns. Why do I have the fear? And what is the fear and why do I have it? Okay, so that's basically what you have. Why do I have the fear? What is the fear and why do I have it? Okay, and now they give you a little fear prayer dealing with your fears. And that prayer says, God, remove my fear. Say, God, remove my fear of dying and direct my attention to what you'd have me be. This is called the fear prayer, and that is in the big book, and it's on page 68. And it's called the fear prayer. If you don't have that, that's okay. Do you have that?
It's probably on 86 or 87.
In your book, it's probably on 86 or 87. 87? Okay, in your book, you'll be on 87. God, remove my fear of dying and direct my attention to what you'd have me be. And I'm always directed to work with another person. If I can get out of me and I can think about you, then I'm not thinking about my fear, and God can get in there and relieve me of it. Okay, does anybody have any questions about that? What is my fear? Why do I have it? And then the fear prayer. Fear is such a big deal for alcoholics that we have to do, I mean, all alcoholics. A lot of our character defects fall under the category of fear. And it's such a big deal for us that we're supposed to do a whole inventory on it. That's how big this is for alcoholics. How many here think you really suffer with fear? Most of the room. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just wondering. Joe and Charlie had 5 columns for fear and put up pretty much exactly the same way as your sentence.
Yeah, I know Joe and Charlie really well. And the reason why they do that, because I've talked to them about that, the reason why they do that is they don't, in the big book, it gives you 2 columns. It says, what is fear? Why do you have it? Is it because self-reliance failed you? The reason why they have 5 columns is they want it to be consistent so it didn't confuse a newcomer. Because this just confused you, and that's what's really good about it, about the way Joe and Charlie do it. They just do it like inconsiderate comes under sex. You know, it's not even in the resentment thing, but they just put it all lumped together and they make fear just like the other one so it doesn't confuse you. But in the big book, it just says 2 columns. So if you want to carry it through, you can do the 5 columns on the fear. But that's not what's in the big book. Anybody else have any columns? Have any questions? Just let's add some more columns. I'm sorry if this is scattered. It's because I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get all this into one thing. Okay, let's move on to sex. Okay, and you can put all those 5 columns with sex. Okay, so it's whom did I hurt because of my sex conduct? Not who hurt me. If somebody hurt you, it goes under resentment. Say somebody passed on to you a sexual transmitted disease and you're pissed at them. That goes under resentment. That does not go under the sex inventory. What goes under the sex inventory is who did you hurt because of your sex conduct. Say you pass that disease on to someone else, then that person would go on your sex inventory. A lot of things go on your sex inventory that you might not think about. First of all, it's not all about the people you sleep with. On my sex inventory, I had to put, first of all, who I hurt the most because of my sexual conduct was my daughter. I hurt my daughter. And she shared who she hurt because of her sexual conduct because she hurt her parents. So it encompasses a lot more than the people that we're sleeping with. And, of course, abortions would fall under there. We hurt unborn children. So let's just give the 5 columns. It's, okay, what is the first column is whom did I hurt? So what did you put there? Children? I put my daughter. We'll do mine. Okay, how did I hurt him? I hurt my daughter because I had unhealthy men around the house. I put her in dangerous situations. I left her alone while I went out there and did whatever I did. So that was very harmful to my daughter. And how does this affect me? It affects my self-esteem. It affects my personal relationships. It affects my emotional nature. It affects my security. I'm afraid my daughter will never love me again. It affects my future ambitions. And, yes?
They don't talk about the emotional natures in the book, do they?
They do. You have to read all those pages. Okay. You will see emotional nature. Okay. And it affected my future ambitions. And then it says, what was my part in it? My part was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, inconsiderate. And then in the sex inventory, it says, what could I have done instead? And this is a very important column because sometimes, and it also when you get into 10, 11 in the big book, you'll see what could I have done better. This is an important column because sometimes you can't change your behavior unless you know what you can change it to. So what could I have done instead of some of those things? I could have lived up to my immorals. You might put I could have abstained. I could have just had sex in marriage. Say you passed on a sexually transmitted disease. You could say that I could have used protection. And say you're resentful at yourself because, say the person you hurt was an aborted child, that you had an abortion. So the person you hurt was an aborted child. What could you have done instead? Maybe use protection, maybe abstain, not had sex out of marriage. So those are some of the things that can go in that column. Does anybody have any questions? Nobody has any questions? Okay. Then let's move on.